I'm Shelley Schlender for MeAndMyDiabetes.com. When Amber O'Hearn decided to stop eating plants for just a little while to see if it would help her lose weight, it worked. But it also led to something unexpected. With Amber's change of diet, her depression and bipolar disorders went away. Now it's years later. Since changing to a high-fat, meat-based, no-plant diet, Amber's weight has remained in a healthy range, and she hasn't needed any drugs for mood stabilization. Now here's Amber.
You are a computer scientist. Are you a data geek?
Yes, I am a data geek, but my interest in computer science didn't come from interest in data. It came from interest in math. It turns out that computer science is really just math on steroids. And I went to university initially to study math, and I was also interested in languages. And I eventually became a computer scientist, and now I'm a programmer for a living.
Well, that's a lot of kind of intellectual thinking power and style that you have. So are you pretty smart? Do other people say you're pretty smart?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people respect my intellectual ability and think that I'm smart. I tend to be modest because the more you learn, the more you know that you don't know. And so I never want to close my mind and think that I know more than I do just because I've been thinking about it a lot.
All right, now, Amber O'Hearn, I've said all of this because you don't exactly eat the way the American anything says to eat. Let's name some of the institutions where you don't follow their rules about how to eat. The United States Department of Agriculture, do you follow their way to eat?
Not at all, not remotely.
How about the American Heart Association?
No.
How about Michael Pollan?
Even Michael Pollan and I differ quite a bit in what we would recommend people eat.
How about all of those people who say that it's best for you to eat lots of leafy vegetables and fruit and a little bit of meat sparingly and probably keep your fat content low and have a lot of healthy carbohydrates?
I really resonate with those people because I think that people who are vegetarian or who eat mostly plant diets care a lot about the same things that I care about, which is health and the environment. And I think that all that happened was that I looked at the data differently from the way they did. I was brought up vegetarian, and I loved eating that way. I became a very proficient cook. I made all kinds of Middle Eastern kinds of foods, and I loved all those vegetables that a lot of people complain about, like broccoli and spinach. I never had any issue with the taste of vegetables. I think they're wonderful. But when I started eating this way, which I did for health reasons.
Now, what is this way?
When I started eating only meat, I was a little bit worried initially that I was feeling more healthy in spite of the fact that I wasn't eating vegetables instead of because of the fact that I wasn't eating vegetables.
Now, Amber O'Hearn, you just said that you eat only meat. Does that mean that you eat lean meat or fat meat?
Primarily fatty meat. I will eat some leaner things like fish and I guess fish would be the leanest thing I eat, but I always prefer very fatty meat. Red meat is my particular favorite, and I think it's the healthiest. I will eat the darker meats of chicken or poultry. And if I do eat lean meat, I make sure that I add other fat in the form of tallow or butter so that I'm not eating too lean.
If we were to estimate the amount of calories that you eat of protein, carbohydrates, and fat, what would you say that ratio is?
By calorie, when I have measured it, I tend to eat somewhere between 65 and 80% fat. And I eat about 2 to 3,000 calories a day.
All right, 2 to 3,000 calories a day, 65 to 80% of calories is fat. How many calories of carbohydrate?
Essentially none. There are cuts of meat or non-plant foods that have carbohydrates in them. I don't drink milk that has a lot of carbohydrate and too much for me. But I will have cream on occasion or cheese, seafood and liver, all of those have small amounts of carbohydrate, even eggs. But the amount of calories that it's contributing to my diet is essentially negligible.
And you eat 75 to 80% of your calories as fat, and that means about how many, 20% to 25% maybe is protein?
Yes, 65% to 80% fat, and the rest is all protein. So it could go as high as 35% or as low as 20%.
This is not exactly the way the American Medical Association, American Heart Association, USDA, food pyramid does not say to eat the way that you're eating. But you say that it wasn't just the flavor that made you decide to eat this way. What was the reason you decided to do this?
I've been eating a low-carb diet for a very long time, and that definitely increased my health. But there was a point when, over the years, I noticed that I was becoming fatter, and that was difficult for me because I knew I was eating healthy. I have a very strong genetic propensity to fatness. It's in my family. And I don't know if it was because I was getting older, because I had had children, or any number of reasons, but it was disturbing to me.
Now let's step back a bit. You're pretty trim right now. Would you say that you're at a good weight?
Yes. I don't remember my exact BMI, but I think it might be 20 or 22. So it's right smack in the middle of what's considered ideal.
So you're at an ideal body weight according to most measures today. What happened when you were gaining weight? How long ago was that?
It was at the end of 2008 that I was beginning to feel severe frustration with my weight. And at that time, I was searching on the internet and I noticed some people who were eating only meat. And they had come from a low-carb background, and they were reporting success stories of losing weight that they hadn't been able to lose, even on a low-carb diet, and other health benefits that they were unexpectedly seeing. So I thought to myself, why not give that a try? After all, eating only meat is really just an extreme version of a low-carb diet. It's very close to what people recommend, even Atkins in his induction phase, or the beginning of the protein power regimen. Just really cut back on the vegetables for the first few weeks. And I thought to myself, I could do that. Maybe I could do that for 3 whole weeks. And then maybe that would allow me to drop some of this weight that's accumulated, and then I could go back to my regular low-carb diet.
How much weight had you gained?
At that point, I was probably over 190 pounds.
How much do you weigh now?
Now I weigh 130.
So you were 60 pounds more than you are today.
1.5 times my current weight, and I'm 5'6".
What happened when you started eating all meat and you cut out fruit, vegetables?
It was intimidating at first to cut out everything except meat. And I spent a lot of time preparing for it mentally.
Oh, so you thought this through. You didn't just say, oh, I'll try this a little bit.
No, I wanted to give it a real chance and do it for more than a couple of days. I thought 3 weeks would be a good enough trial to see if it would really help me.
And you had children at this point?
I had 2 children. One of them was 7 and the other was 4.
Did you feed them an all-meat diet too, or did you feed them and your husband a different diet than you were eating?
The diet that I was feeding my children and my husband at the time was basically a low-carb diet. They didn't have the same kinds of restrictions as I did in trying to keep their carb count as low, but we ate the same meals.
What did you use to have for breakfast with your family?
Bacon and eggs, or some kind of lower carb version of traditional breakfast things. For example, we sometimes ate pancakes made out of rice protein powder with some sweetener, sausages.
And you ate salads, and you gave your kids fruit now and then. Am I thinking right?
We definitely ate fruit. We ate salads. We ate a lot of salads. Salad was our mainstay. On a low-carb diet, you typically eat some meat and a lot of vegetables, a lot of low starch vegetables. So we had salads with every meal.
Even eating this way, you were getting heavier than you wanted to be.
Yes.
Was that the only health problem you were encountering?
That was the only health problem that I had that I thought was diet related.
So you had some other health problems, but you were kind of thinking, well, this is just who I am?
Yes. In particular, I had an adult long problem with depression. When I was about 20, I was first diagnosed with major depressive disorder. And that came back many times throughout the years, and it was getting worse and worse.
What does that mean? What does that feel like if you're majorly depressed?
Depression feels like low energy and low motivation and a kind of loss of faith in the world and that anything is going to go well for you. There's a real disengagement with people and a real disillusionment with life.
Is it like all the color goes away?
Yes, almost literally. There have been times when I tried different antidepressants, and sometimes the first symptom, if it was going to be helpful, and some of them were helpful for a time, would be actual vivid, more vivid colors appearing in my life.
Where you'd look at the spring and you'd say, look at how beautiful those apple blossoms and fruit blossoms are on the trees, and you hadn't seen them the year before?
Yes, absolutely.
That was something that you just took for granted, that this is just who you were, someone who needed medications to deal with having major depression?
Yes. It's often talked about as some kind of a brain imbalance, where it's just part of your physiology to be depressed. It's talked about as a disease and something that should be managed throughout your life. I was initially put on Prozac. This would have been around 1992, and that was one of the only drugs of that class that was available at the time, and there was a lot of excitement about it because it was new. And initially it did help me. I don't know that it had any side effects that I was aware of, but I was on that drug for a very long time.
Did it keep helping you?
It didn't keep helping me.
How could you tell?
I was still depressed.
The colors didn't stay bright.
They didn't. And, you know, when you're one person, you never quite know if, you know, what the alternative is. So if I had stopped taking Prozac, which I did at certain times out of frustration, would I get worse? Is this really helping? Would I be more depressed if I weren't taking it? Those kinds of questions you can't really answer as an individual. And so I did, for the most part, continue to take it for well over a decade.
Okay, so let's fast forward to how many years after you started taking Prozac for major depression to when you decided to start eating all meat because you wanted to lose some weight?
Before that happened, there were changes in my depressive disorder that I'd like to tell you about. I started taking other antidepressants because the Prozac wasn't helping. And what is known now, but wasn't known at least to me then, is that antidepressants, if you have bipolar disorder, can increase the progress of that disease.
Bipolar, I tend to think of as not only feeling depressed sometimes, but feeling kind of manic, you know, extra high energy, not able to sleep, getting a little too high.
That's absolutely right. And in bipolar type 1, you can actually have psychotic episodes, extreme mania. It can be life-destroying. It's very scary. What happened with me is that I started to have symptoms of bipolar 2, which is mostly characterized by depression, but which has what are called hypomanias, which are like mania, but less severe. And I now believe that it was the antidepressants that were hastening the progress of that propensity that I had. So it's like I had bipolar disorder, but it was latent and it was progressing.
And you had this not super high mania, would you get really giggly or be telling jokes and then after a couple of days you would crash?
Yes, that's right. So there are things like wanting to talk really fast, having ideas that seem really exciting to you. It actually feels really good to have a hypomania, but it doesn't feel so good when you then crash, and it can be concerning for the people around you.
All right, so you had started out at the age of 20 on Prozac to hopefully help you not be depressed anymore. When it hadn't worked, you had gone on to some other medications, but then you started on this seesaw between not being able to get out of the depression, except for times where you got a little maniac.
Right. And so at that time, I was really excited because I was re-diagnosed with bipolar 2. That may not sound very exciting. It's a bit of a more dangerous disease, but I was excited because I thought, oh, this is the reason that these medications haven't been helping me. They're not the right ones. Now I can start taking the right kind of medication and maybe I will finally get better.
What kind of medications did you change to?
I tried a variety of medicines for bipolar disorder. Most of them are anti-epileptic drugs, which is interesting.
What makes it interesting to you?
There may be similarities between epilepsy and bipolar disorder. And ketogenic diets have long been known to be helpful in epilepsy, and we're only beginning to see some reasons to believe that they will be helpful in bipolar disorder.
What is a ketogenic diet?
A ketogenic diet is a fancy word for a low-carb diet. What happens is if you eat little enough carbohydrate, your body will start to rely on fat metabolism instead of sugar metabolism. And one of the metabolites that's being used when you're relying on fat is a ketone, and so they call it ketogenic.
It just occurred to me, Amber O'Hearn, you eat a diet that doesn't have any carbohydrates in it. You use ketones as your fuel in your body because that's what you get from fat. The American Diabetes Association is one of the groups that warns that if people don't have, I think it's 150 grams of carbohydrate a day, their brain cannot function properly. How is your brain?
Still alive.
All right, so you were going and thinking about these things from seeing what science is saying about epilepsy, some evidence that it might help bipolar. Were these thoughts in your mind when you shifted from a low-carb diet to an all meat and meat fats diet?
Absolutely not. When I encountered the forums on the internet where people were eating only meat, one of the main people involved, whose name is Charles Washington, said something that has stuck with me for a long time. What he said was, only the lucky ones get fat. And what he meant by that was, it is really hard to be fat in this society. People make all kinds of horrible assumptions about fat people, that they're less competent, possibly even less intelligent. And I think that that comes from the mistaken idea that if you're overweight, all you have to do is work at it. If you'd only eat a little less and exercise a little more, you can control your weight. So when we look at someone who's overweight, we think undisciplined. So it's very uncomfortable to be fat in this society. And what Charles meant when he said the lucky ones get fat is that there is a huge motivation to lose weight when you're overweight. When you discover, as many people do, that the dietary recommendations that are current in our society are not helping the majority of people who are overweight, people who are very driven will start looking for other solutions. And if you find a low-carb diet, then you're very likely to increase your health in many ways beyond just losing weight.
For you and for many people, Charles Washington says that it's so painful to be in a society that shames people that are overweight that you looked extra hard for a solution.
Right.
Now, you were already on a low-carb diet, Amber O'Hearn, when you decided to switch to an all-meat, mostly meat-fat diet.
That's right. And my motivation at that time was completely based in vanity. Here it was, January of 2009, and I had decided I was going to try an all-meat diet for 3 weeks. I timed it so that the end of the 3 weeks would be my birthday, and on my birthday I was going to have a slice of birthday cake. And that birthday cake slice never came, because the effects of my all-meat diet were so profound that I felt it would be irresponsible not to continue it.
Was it because you were losing weight and you were happy about that, or were there other effects that you were surprised by?
I was losing weight and I was ecstatic about that. I lost about 10 pounds, I think, in those 3 weeks. But what happened that was astounding was that within about 2 weeks, my mood became stable.
How could you tell?
I noticed that I was feeling a lot better, happier, more energetic, enthusiastic, motivated. But when you have had bipolar disorder, you lose some trust in your own brain. It's easy to think, oh, I could just be having a hypomania, this isn't real. It's a very difficult disease to deal with in that way.
But you'd said that you were put on medicines that were specially designed for people who are bipolar too. Hadn't those medicines been helping you?
No, to the contrary. Some of those medicines gave me short-term relief. None of them helped in the long term, and all of them came with much worse side effects than any of the antidepressants I had had ever did.
What kind of side effects?
One of them caused me to have trouble recalling words. One of them gave me shock-like sensations down the back of my head, which I looked up and are lovingly called brain shocks by the internet community. One of them made it uncomfortable to sit. It's called akathisia, and I just constantly felt like my back was not in the right position. And one of them gave me such deep anxiety that at every moment I thought that I or one of my children was going to die that day.
What are the names of these medicines? Do you remember some of them?
I'm not sure I remember the mapping of side effects to symptoms, but I know I was on Lamictal, aripiprazole. I did try Seroquel, which made me sleep like a zombie. It was completely debilitating. And there were a few others.
Well-regarded bipolar II medicines available to doctors today. They didn't quite work for you.
Not only did they not help me, but they made my life miserable. And my disease was progressing. My cycles of mood changes were becoming more rapid. And the states were becoming what they call mixed states. So it wasn't just a matter of being super depressed or being super happy. I was having anxiety combined with anger. I was having low energy with high mood. It was really a nightmare.
Now, when you switch to your all-meat, mostly meat-fat diet, and you started to feel as though your mood was stabilizing, were you still taking these medications?
I was on a very small dose of Abilify at that time. That was the one that caused a great deal of anxiety. And if I dialed back the dose, then the anxiety was just barely there, so it was manageable.
What did you do when you started feeling more stable as you were eating differently? When it comes to your medicines, what did you do?
Well, the first thing that happened was I wasn't sure about it. So I asked my husband, I said to him, you know, I've been feeling a lot happier. My mood feels better. And he took me in his arms, looked in my eyes and said, Amber, your mood is more stable now than it's ever been in the course of our marriage. And this was 2 weeks on an all-meat diet.
So he had noticed.
He had noticed. It wasn't my imagination. So at that point, I thought, well, I'm sticking with this. A complication came up because another week passed and I discovered I was pregnant.
Pregnancy causes moods to go up and down a lot.
It sure does, especially in those susceptible. And it also drives fat storage. So after about 4 weeks of being on a no-carb, meat-only diet, I started to have intense carb cravings. And I think that's because my insulin had gone up, which is the body's hormonal way of saying, please make me fat. And so after a few days of dreaming about carbohydrates, I went to the local restaurant and I ordered 3 entrees and ate them all.
Do you remember what they were?
One of them was a quiche. One of them involved pancakes. I'm not sure what the third was. It was very carby food. Not what I'd been eating at all, including before I ate an all-meat diet. That settled down. By the time I was well into the pregnancy, I was eating a regular low-carb diet again and even several all-meat days. But it wasn't until after I gave birth that I decided to try the all-meat diet again. 1 week after my youngest child, Graham, was born, I started a zero-carb diet again. And once again, within less than 2 weeks, my mood became completely stable. That was almost 7 years ago, and I haven't looked back.
7 years now eating a low-carb, actually a no-carb diet. Are you taking those medicines anymore, the bipolar medications?
No, that was another funny way that this unfolded for me, because the fact that I was pregnant meant that I could no longer take those drugs safely. So I was off all mood stabilizing drugs for the course of the pregnancy.
With your doctor's recommendation for the sake of your baby.
Absolutely. As soon as the baby was born, I started the diet again, and I no longer needed the medications.
Did you let your doctor or your psychiatrist know that you weren't going to take these anymore?
Yes. I consulted with my doctor. He could see the effect it was having on me, and my husband was there with me to corroborate the evidence that I was okay, and he was really quite thrilled about it. He did not exactly like the fact that I wasn't eating any vegetables at all. He said, "You should do it just like that, except eat some green leafy vegetables." And I said, "Well, I'll think about it."
Do you mind if I ask, who is your psychiatrist?
The name of my psychiatrist? I was working with Deborah Stettler at the time, and I didn't go back to Deborah Stettler. I continued to consult with my family doctor, Paul Berger. It was my family doctor who was open to it. I actually didn't consult with Dr. Stettler again because I just felt I had no more need.
Did you ever talk with your psychiatrist about how you were eating?
I consulted with my psychiatrist before I was pregnant, and I didn't tell her when I was changing my diet. Then when I became pregnant, she and I both agreed that I wouldn't continue on that medication. And so there were 9 or so months when I wasn't really in communication with my psychiatrist about medication. By the time the baby was born and I went back on my diet, I didn't need to consult with her anymore.
And then you consulted with your family doctor?
Yes, I guess my family practitioner, Dr. Paul Berger here in Boulder.
Paul Berger is known as someone who's open to different ways to eat.
Yes, he is. Dr. Berger already recommends that people eliminate certain foods from their diet to see if they're having consequences. And so he was very open to see what had happened for me.
With his guarded blessing, you continued on this all-meat, mostly meat-fat diet. Do you take vitamin C?
I almost never take supplements.
But Amber O'Hearn, it's a well-known fact among most medical people that if you don't take vitamin C when you're eating meats, then your teeth are going to fall out and your joints are going to hurt. Have your teeth fallen out?
Absolutely not. I don't have scurvy. And as Arctic explorers know, fresh meat will cure scurvy because it has enough vitamin C to provide what you need.
Is there also some thought among those doctors and historians who've studied Arctic explorers and Inuit, if you're not eating carbohydrates, your need for vitamins, such as vitamin C, goes down?
That's an excellent point. There are a couple of reasons for that that I can tell. One is that it's not advertised very widely, but meat is actually much more nutrient dense than vegetables are. I think that historically the reason we talk about vitamins in vegetables is to try to get people to eat them, not because they were lacking in meat. The other thing is that carbohydrate metabolism is taxing on the body. It's taxing for many things such as magnesium. It's taxing on the thyroid. So not only do I get enough vitamins and minerals from the meat that I eat, but there are certain vitamins and minerals that I actually need less of.
You just mentioned thyroid. Had you ever had thyroid problems in the past?
Yes, in fact, I was diagnosed as hypothyroid, and I was taking thyroid medication before I went on an all-meat diet, and now I don't have to.
Hypothyroid, that means not enough thyroid, which can be part of gaining weight, which can be part of feeling low in energy. So in addition to your bipolar medicines, you were taking a supplement to boost your thyroid in your body.
That's right.
And now you don't need to do that?
Right.
How's your energy?
Fantastic.
What do you think is why this way to eat fits you so well? Is it just because you chose it and there's a placebo effect to choosing something that makes it be much healthier for you than other things might be? Is it that or is it something else?
I couldn't totally rule that out. But the effects have been so significant that I highly doubt that it's just about my choice. I've been thinking about it a lot because I've been eating this way for a very long time, 7 years now almost. One hypothesis I had originally was that different people have different tolerances for carbohydrate, and maybe mine was just particularly low. So eating all meat means that I get almost no carbohydrate, and maybe that's just where I needed to be. But as I began to study the role of vegetables in diet, I found out that not only are they not necessary for health, but they don't actually necessarily have the benefits that people think that they do.
But Amber O'Hearn, it's been well documented that vegetables are full of phytonutrients. Superfoods like blueberries, like kale, any kind of dark green leafy vegetable, radishes, onions.
Plants are full of drugs. That's because they evolved a different strategy for survival than animals who can run. Plants are under attack and they can't get away, and so they have developed what I call a biochemical warfare, really. Their bodies are full of chemicals, usually pesticides, that will kill an insect that tries to eat it. Some plants are poisonous, obviously, to other animals. And there are even reactions that plants have where the poisons won't come out until, for example, the leaf is torn. Or if the plant is getting particularly foraged that year, it will up its amount of toxins. Some people have the idea that humans evolved with a kind of symbiosis with plants, such that eating little bits of them provided us with things that we needed in order to stay healthy. But that doesn't seem to be the case. Many of those phytochemicals are just as damaging as they are helpful. Yes, you can isolate them and concentrate them and provide a treatment the way you would a drug, but that's a drug. That is not something that's necessary for health.
Plants, according to many health experts, have great nutrition in them that can help us be well. But I hear you saying that plants also have many weapons of mass destruction inside of them to protect them so that they don't get eaten too much.
That's right.
And it's not that they have anything against us humans, really. It's more that they're trying to fight the bugs and the parasites that normally eat them, but those bugs and parasites are not that different in how they digest things than us, so they can hurt us too, those weapons that plants have.
That's right. So a lot of the time with certain vegetables, what you're doing when you're eating a lot of them is eating small doses of poisons. People talk about the disease-fighting chemicals that can be in plants. And I would want to caution that while there may be elements inside plants that we could use by concentrating and isolating to fight a disease, they're often a double-edged sword. So consider, for example, chemotherapy. Chemotherapy kills cancerous cells, but it also kills your healthy cells. And the target with that is to try to kill the cancer cells faster than the healthy cells. So just because you've isolated something inside a plant that fights cancer doesn't necessarily mean that it's good for you all around.
Do you have friends who eat a lot of vegetables and are very healthy and have stable moods?
Absolutely.
Why do you think you're different?
I don't know if my body's just more sensitive than others, or if they just don't know how good they could feel if they stopped eating plants. I know it's anecdote, but I've been on many different forums on the internet where there have been people who are eating the way I'm eating, and a lot of them are finding the same kinds of things that I'm finding. Either it helps with their mood or it helps with other problems. In particular, there seems to be a lot of relief from diseases that are autoimmune in nature. For example, arthritis, multiple sclerosis I've seen help with, symptoms that might be Lyme disease. People who are having troubles that are considered progressive lifelong diseases that we don't really know how to solve have sometimes been getting relief from not eating vegetables.
Although there are also some people who have had these very serious conditions who've gotten relief from eating a very high leafy green vegetable diet with very small amounts of protein, very lean, not a lot of fat, and they've gotten better too.
That's true. And there's only so far we can go with anecdotes without doing more controlled trials. However, it's often the case that people changing their diets, even if the diet is not optimal, just the change from the standard American diet is such an improvement that they're going to see improvements in their health.
None of these people are eating Twinkies and pizza, so maybe whatever they've switched to is better for them. But you had switched to already what most people would say was a healthful diet, lots of salads, you weren't eating ice cream, no sodas.
That's right.
And you still weren't feeling better until you switched to all meat. And one question I had two more questions for you, really. One will have to do with the ecological impacts of someone eating the way that you do. Before we get to that, I've got another question, which is, why do you eat mostly fat? Why not eat just lean meat?
There are two reasons that I eat mostly fat, at least. One of them is that there's only so much protein your body needs. After you get enough protein, protein isn't really a fuel. It's used to repair your body. Once you've eaten enough protein to take care of the maintenance of your cells and all of the bodily needs of protein, what you really want is fuel. And fuel is provided by fat. So I eat the protein that I need that's adequate for my nutritional needs that way. And then whatever else I need for energy comes from fat.
I'm guessing that you've experimented with eating a lot more meat and less fat.
Two things happened when I tried a lower fat and thereby higher protein diet. One was that I still felt hungry. And the other is that it just didn't keep my mood as stable.
One thing that happens when someone eats excess protein is that a lot of that protein gets turned into sugar. The nitrogen, the ammonia part of it gets cleaved off, and what's left is something that can be burned as sugar.
It can be. I have a bit of a different take on that because I think that once you're on a ketogenic diet, your liver is providing your glucose, and it's really a demand-driven process, not a supply-driven process. So your body calls for sugar just enough for certain cells that still need it, some in your brain and some in your blood cells. And just adding more material to make more sugar doesn't necessarily make your blood sugar rise. But I think what happens is if you eat a lot of protein, there's a hormonal response to that. And that hormonal response includes raising insulin. And if your insulin goes up, then your ability to burn fat goes down. And if your ability to burn fat goes down, your body wants energy from something, and it calls for more sugar. And so the end result is that eating too much protein at a certain level will cause you to start burning more sugar, even if it's not just that the protein turns immediately to sugar.
Okay, so in those ways, you notice that when you ate more protein and less fat, you didn't feel as good.
Right.
How about your blood work? What does your blood work show about you? Do you have super high cholesterol? Do you have health issues that show up in your blood work because of your unusual diet?
My total cholesterol would probably be considered quite high. It's well over 200. However, I don't really care about total cholesterol because I've learned through study that the kinds of cholesterol that are correlated with heart disease and other problems that we're seeing are high triglycerides and low HDL. And my triglycerides are extremely low. My HDL is very high.
How low is extremely low?
Last time I measured, it was definitely under 100. It might have been around 50. And my HDL is around 50 as well. So the ratio between them is about 1, which is fantastically low risk.
Have you ever had your inflammatory markers checked, things like C-reactive protein or homocysteine?
Yes, and they're all low.
Did you ever have them checked before you switched to this way of eating?
Unfortunately not. I might just be lucky that way.
Might be lucky, or maybe they changed. You don't know.
That's right.
You do know that your mood changed, and your husband thinks so, and your doctors think so.
Yes.
Let's talk about the environment. How are you saving the world if you're eating so much meat and meat fat?
The first and foremost thing on my mind about saving the environment is that I can't help the environment if I'm depressed and sick. So I'm putting my own oxygen mask on first. However, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about the effect of livestock on the environment. In fact, a lot of the world's environment and ecosystem really can't sustain anything other than livestock. I had the great fortune to visit Ireland a month ago, and a lot of the land that I went by, there were sheep grazing and there were cattle grazing. There weren't plants being produced by humans in order to sell as food, because it's just not fit for that. Sheep and cattle and deer and other ruminants are a natural part of our environment. They belong here, and they actually help by fertilizing the land. It's a great boon to us to use that land and let the animals that evolved to be there, be there.
Do you eat feedlot-fed animals, or do you eat processed meats like bacon and salami? What do you eat?
I mostly eat whole cuts of meat and not processed meat in the sense of smoked or dried, such as salami or bacon. I'll have them sometimes, but I feel best when I eat a roast or a steak. Those are the foods that really make me feel healthy.
I'm puzzled because a lot of those roasts and steaks are pretty lean. How do you get enough fat?
I prefer the fattier cuts. I obviously don't eat, you know, prime ribeye steak every day, but I would prefer to. But I keep the fat when I cook. I have jars of fat. It's actually a little bit hard to keep up with. You'd be surprised at how much fat comes off even the leaner cuts if you reserve it properly.
Oh, so you save every bit of fat that comes off of any piece of meat and you eat the fat.
Absolutely.
Do you think that the world could live with more people eating meat and less grains and soy products and dairy?
Grain has been a boon to people in the sense that it really allowed more people to live because it's cheaper to produce. However, the quality of life has definitely gone down. I don't know what it would take to sustain all the people on the planet without grains, but I think it's something we should absolutely try to do, just as we would try to give everybody clean water. We don't say, well, there's not enough clean water to go around, so let's all drink dirty water. We all try to get clean water for ourselves and for as many people as we can, because that's what's known to be healthy.
Well, your mood is more stable. In fact, your mood is solid now?
Yes.
And how about your family? Do they eat the way that you eat now?
They eat a heavily meat-based diet. My children also eat some plants, but we have found that their moods also improve when they eat less vegetables.
How about your other health? Do you ever catch colds?
Almost never.
Did you used to catch colds?
Once or twice a year.
And now you don't?
I think I've had maybe two in the last 7 years. When I was initially diagnosed with depression, my doctor was open to me trying some nutritional type therapy. So she recommended a couple of different vitamins. She did actually recommend that I increase my protein intake. But she was not at all surprised when I came back to her and told her that didn't work. As to bipolar is very, very serious, and compliance with taking drugs is already very difficult because most of the drugs do give horrible side effects and people don't want to feel dependent. And there's another complication of when you are on the rise in your mood, it can be easily mistaken for being better and not needing the drugs. So I would advise anyone who wants to try this a lot of caution. Stay on the drugs you're on and stay with someone who can help you from the outside know if what you're doing is actually helping. Then if it becomes very clear that diet is stabilizing your mood, then you can gradually, carefully withdraw from drugs with the help of the person who's with that.
Do you think that the overall change for you, I think that you've written about this, that you think that you reduce the inflammatory load on your system to a point that your system could be healthy by changing how you ate? You changed the number of foods you took in that were causing an inflammatory response in your body or an irritation of some kind.
I do feel that. And because the change was so drastic and there are so few foods that I initially started eating, I was able to notice the effects of adding just one food back. And I have, for a long time, stopped trying to mess with that.
What kind of foods did you try to add back in? Ice cream?
Okay. No, I do have a friend who is on a meat-only diet, and she gets relief from her arthritis, and when she tried Brussels sprouts, she was in immediate pain again. For me, I haven't actually tried systematically adding foods back in because the risk is just so high. I don't want to end up lying on my bed looking at the ceiling wishing I was dead. And I was in that situation before. It's just, I have too much at stake. I have 3 children. I have a job I love. I have all kinds of things I want to do with my life. And I don't want to waste any time playing around to see if my mood is going to be good or not and lose time to that. It's too precious.
So when the birthday cake comes out and someone says, oh, just this one time, won't you have some? What do you say?
No, thank you. I have a vegetarian friend who did offer me some food and was quite frustrated that I would say, there's the train.
Oh, that's right. There's a train going by. Well, let's keep talking.
I have a vegetarian friend who once was quite frustrated when he offered me a piece of something delicious looking, and I said no. And he said, why not just one bite? Why can't you have just one bite? And I just was incredulous because I would never turn to him and say, why can't you just have a bite of this meat? That's his choice. He's doing it for reasons that he believes strongly in, and I found it very disrespectful.
He's your friend still?
Yes.
So you talked it out?
I just said no, thank you.
You really think that this could help other people?
I do, and I think there's very little to lose in trying, even if it didn't help somebody. Just knowing that you tried it. If you take the time to eliminate plants from your diet just for 3 weeks and nothing happens, then you've learned something. It's absolutely safe, but the possible benefits are so high that I think it's worth a try.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out how much you're eating. If I got a ribeye steak, and that would be what you ate in the day, how many ounces of the ribeye steak, fat and all, would you eat?
I eat about 2 pounds of meat a day.
That's a lot of meat.
In recent months, or years, it's probably less. It's interesting that when I was actually losing weight is when I was eating more. I might revise that and say, I probably eat 1 to 2 pounds of meat a day.
So 16 to 32 ounces.
Yes.
And do you get your cuts any place special? Do you look for grass-fed versus commercially processed? Do you ask for cuts where they haven't trimmed off the fat?
I do ask for the fattiest cuts that they have. I prefer local and sustainably grown meat. But when I began this diet, I did not shop for any special organic or locally raised meat. I used the same factory farmed meat that I had been using in the past, and it was absolutely unnecessary for me to do that to get the benefits that I got. However, I care about the environment, so insofar as I can afford it, I will definitely prefer those kinds of farms.
So you think that people evolved to eat primarily a meat diet. There's plenty of evidence that hominids went through phases where they ate very little that was animal-based. It was mostly leaves or fruit, and they always had some animal in their diet, but as a major part of their diet, there's not evidence for that until you get into the Ice Age, primarily.
My understanding is that the point at which our brains started changing into their present form was a point where meat became extremely important.
There's some evidence that the easiest things to get as scavengers before man learned how to hunt were the bones that us smarty little primates knew how to crack open, including the skull, which is very fatty.
Right.
In fact, do you ever eat brain or sweetbreads?
I have had sweetbreads. It's difficult to get brain because of regulations, unfortunately.
Concerns about mad cow disease, you think?
I think so, yes.
Okay, but back to the story of our ancestors who weren't worried about things like that.
I think at the point where our brains were evolving, meat was the only food that could sustain the intense brain development that children have even after birth. And so I think it was at that point that we became a meat-eating animal.
And so that's how you think of it. You were eating primarily a meat diet with your third child.
That's right. And the first 2 years of his life, he ate only meat. When he went to a daycare where they were serving fruits for snack, I allowed him to have that. And then he reacted to those. He had rashes. And I thought, you know, I know now that he doesn't need that. And so we went back to an all-meat diet. He now eats primarily meat, a few root vegetables that he can tolerate.
How are your children's health?
They're doing great.
Do they get runny noses? Do they get earaches? Do they have attention deficit problems? Those things are so common today.
My youngest child, the one who was weaned onto meat, was so extraordinarily healthy that the caretakers at the various daycares he went to commented on it constantly. Up through kindergarten, he never missed a day of school, whereas all of his peers were missing school constantly. That means he was exposed to the same things, and it just never took him out. So I would say, for whatever reason, and quite possibly because of his diet, he is very, very robust.
How about your other children?
My other children eat a diet similar to mine and to the youngest, although their enculturation started before, and so it's a lot more difficult for them. However, I will say that my middle child had behavioral problems from a very young age, which I eventually realized matched symptoms of ADHD and SPD, which is sensory processing disorder, which is basically your brain is overloaded with information and is having trouble organizing it. When he was 4 was when I discovered this diet for myself, and I tried it on him, and it had profound effects on his behavior as well. So that has been his diet primarily until now as well.
Have you ever tried increasing your fat intake even higher? so that you get 17% of your energy from protein or less, and the rest of it from fat.
When I have tried to increase my fat to that degree, I often find myself hungry, and I don't tolerate hunger very well.
So you've done the experiment in all directions?
Yes. I said I don't tolerate hunger. I've fasted and not had much of a problem with that.
Do you find that hunger is a form of chronic pain? Meaning that when you're eating the way that you're eating, do you feel hungry or do you just feel satisfied?
I feel satisfied the way I'm eating. I don't have to eat as often as I did when I was on a carbohydrate-based diet. In fact, I typically eat two meals a day, sometimes just one. And I never get those feelings that my energy is dropping so low that I can't go on with my day.
Do you like to exercise?
I like to play. I like to dance. I do some weight-bearing exercise specifically targeted. I use the super slow system, specifically the variety of that I'm doing is the Power of 10. I go to Inform Fitness, which is located in Broomfield. Chuck B. Stricky is my trainer there, and he's absolutely fantastic. The great thing about that is you work out so hard, so intensely, you take your muscles to fatigue, you only have to work out once a week for about 20 minutes. And with my children and my job and all my hobbies, that's about all I want to sink into that.
Amber O'Hearn, do you mind if I ask how old you are today?
I'm 43.
How old do most people think you are when they meet you?
I think that most people think I'm in my 30s, although when I was in Ireland last month, I had some 20-year-old fellows think that I was in my 20s, which was quite fun. I don't think most people think that. And I don't know, I might just be genetically lucky, but I do feel that I have shed years as well in this process just because of energy and enthusiasm, which goes a long way, and youthfulness.
How are colors these days?
Bright and beautiful. You asked me if I thought that everyone would do well on this diet. And we all know people who eat a lot of vegetables and don't seem to be troubled by them. What I think is that the evolved diet for us is meat-based, but that some people can tolerate more vegetables than others. And I'm low on that spectrum, and other people may be as well. So I think there are plenty of people who could eat a diet including meat and also including a lot of vegetables and be healthy for the rest of their days. But I do think that there are a lot of people who would benefit from cutting back on those plants.
I'm Shelley Schlender. Our guest has been Amber O'Hearn. Thanks to my friend Lynn Patrick for this music. For more about Amber and Lynn and more stories like these, visit meandmydiabetes.com.